You won't believe how sinister this gets. And it might start out sounding like it's just another internet conspiracy. But by the end of this video, if your skin is not crawling, it should be. There's a man on the internet who does not move. Or at least that's how we're going to start this story. It's how most people start this story. He sits behind a desk in a suit, sometimes for hours, staring directly into the camera and speaking with the strange composure of somebody who's delivering a testimony before Congress or something. And his name is Aegon Chalakian.
Greetings. My name is Aegon Chalakian. The 8.8 magnitude earthquake in Kamchatka shook the world on July 30th, 2025. It was one of the most powerful in recent decades. But if you believe this was the end of this particular chapter, you are vastly mistaken. The Kamchatka earthquake is merely the beginning of a new phase of escalating catastrophes.
A name that sounds, honestly, like it's straight out of Game of Thrones. And in a weird way, I guess all of life right now is kind of a Game of Thrones, especially in the West. So from that perspective, he's in the shadows. Not quite a main character, not quite a wannabe king, definitely not a king, but also most definitely not somebody you want plotting against you. If you discovered this guy without context, you might assume that you had stumbled onto some obscure government broadcast that was never intended to reach you, or some scientist's manifesto that maybe wasn't designed for the audience that you're in, but more like it was designed for a completely different collection of people, and yet somehow presented in a way that if you wanted, the message could be for you.
Billions of people will die prematurely from diseases caused by micro and nanoplastic penetrating every organ. Official statistics will not show this link. These ailments will be disguised as ordinary illnesses, cancer, heart failure, or neurological disorders. But the root cause will be the same, micro and nanoplastic. Those who survive will rapidly deteriorate, losing their cognitive capacities. The human mind, our highest endowment, will begin to fade. All that will remain of the human being are basic animal instincts. A brutal primitive struggle for survival and for food will begin. In both the literal and figurative sense, you will start devouring one another. Forgive my bluntness, but I am compelled to speak plainly. The strong will consume the weak. Do you remember the zombie apocalypse films? That scenario will become reality only without makeup and special effects. We now find ourselves in a dead-end situation.
The lighting in his videos is sterile, the delivery is formal, but the language is urgent and confusing and filled with big words that are often mispronounced. The topics he covers are human civilization and how it's approaching catastrophe, annihilation, and doomsday. He talks about how something is happening inside the earth. It's bleeding out. Something is happening to the climate. It's turning against us. We are destroying the planet ourselves. Something is happening to humanity. We're cannibalizing ourselves. And according to Chalakian, we're running out of time. Fast. And his videos can stretch on for hours. Sometimes entire days. Some of them, he doesn't even really move in. He barely seems to reposition himself at all. His hands remain as still as the air in the room, as if he's mummified. Only his mouth and his head move, as if he's not even real. A mannequin, perhaps. A digital mannequin. His posture hardly changes, but his voice just continues, and his eyes dart here and there like he's reading off of a teleprompter. This might explain why so often he is unable to pronounce the word anomaly. You find yourself kind of shuffling uncomfortably just listening to him talk, and you wonder how he can remain so statuesque in spite of the words that he's saying. And now, A quick word from my handler.
The author of this video would like to inform the public that he is by no means attempting to slander, dishonor, or harm the reputation of anyone in this video, including Egon Cholakian, any member of Alatra, or any individual in government, science, or environmentalist networks. This is purely a work of artistic expression. He's sure every individual in this video truly believes they are changing the world for the better. Now back to the show. Enjoy.
Now, this becomes strange enough that an entire conspiracy has formed around him, Egon Cholakian. And people began asking whether Cholakian existed at all. Some began to say that he was generated. Maybe the videos were some kind of artificial intelligence experiment. They were a game, a psychological operation meant to manipulate masses or play a trick, or just another artificial rabbit hole made up by somebody on the internet so they could make their mark in the conspiracy theory underground. Maybe somebody had created this fictional scientist. They had built all these fake credentials around him and generated photographs of him with important people, and then just released him like a digital weapon into the internet to see how easily authority could be manufactured. It's a theory that's pretty hard to dismiss, and it may be true. We live in a time that you can hardly trust anything you even see with your eyes, after all. Unfortunately, however, according to the research that I did and that others have done, it does appear that this theory is wrong, because Egon Cholakian is real. And there's old footage of him on a mundane Zoom call talking casually with other people, joking that he was doing just peachy. And there's also videos of him in the present day, just at conferences around the world. And long before artificial intelligence could convincingly manufacture entire human identities, Cholakian had already somehow managed to create perhaps the most painfully human paper trail imaginable. He once sued the FBI, and when I first came across this fact, I assumed that I had finally found the hidden center of the story and I could count the licks to get there. Here was this old guy who would later present himself as deeply entangled with intelligence and academia and government and national security and scientific institutions. And years before any of that became part of his public persona, his name had already appeared in federal court opposite none other than the FBI. For a moment, it seemed possible that there was something substantial buried there. Perhaps a dispute involving surveillance or spy work, intelligence operations, maybe classified information, or some earlier encounter with the government that might explain why exactly Cholakian's biography seemed to brush so often against these powerful institutions. But then I opened that actual court record, and the entire thing collapsed into something almost comically mundane. The dispute was over a parking space. The man who appears in hours-long videos speaking solemnly about civilization and intelligence, you know, global danger and extraordinary geopolitical forces, also exists in the federal record as a man in Cambridge who became convinced that a parking conflict with a subtenant had grown into some extortion scheme that was serious enough to warrant the attention of the FBI. And as you'd expect, that case was eventually dismissed. But strangely enough, that ridiculous little episode may be one of the most important pieces of evidence in this entire story. Because the man does exist. He's on paper. And once you accept that, this whole story changes. The question is no longer who created Egon Cholakian. The question becomes, what exactly is this weirdo doing? What is he up to, and how does he have so much time on his unmoving hands? Because Cholakian presents himself as something considerably more important than an eccentric YouTuber with a chip on his shoulder and a soft spot for fighting parking tickets. In one of his videos, he describes himself as an intelligence educator and says that he prepares intelligence personnel for clandestine service. What's all that about? I could say I'm exactly the same, and I was. I could also say I'm a purple elephant, and I am. Anyone can say anything into a camera. But then you search his name. And this is where the regular, sort of well-maintained trail through the public park becomes the uncomfortable, horrifying Oregon Trail, complete with the risk of dysentery and savages. His biographies and profiles associate him with institutions that read almost like somebody assembled a list of the most prestigious names they could imagine. A proverbial A-team, if you will, the Avengers of optical illusions and propaganda. And the deeper I looked into Shalakian's public identity, the more his biography began to read less like the life of a single researcher and more like this massive collage of institutional prestige. Harvard, for instance, appeared repeatedly, and so did MIT and Stanford. His name surfaced around scientific workshops and academic networks, government-adjacent events, and international conferences. CERN even entered the picture, along with language involving intelligence education and national security and clandestine service. Taken together, all of this was extremely daunting and overwhelming. He seemed to exist at the intersection of elite academia, advanced science, government, and intelligence, as though he had spent literally decades moving quietly between the most powerful intellectual and political institutions in the Western world. Quite frankly, he seemed like a dude you didn't want to mess with, and also one who couldn't be bothered by a simple parking infraction. This almost made me stop in my tracks because I try to awaken as few beasts as possible. And yet it certainly felt like once again I had encountered a very dark cave with something inside it. And by no means am I the first person to ever talk about what we're going over today, but I don't think that I've talked about it in the way that other people have. And I think you'll find that out by the end. I began to wonder if this entire thing was fraudulent, and going back to my original line of thinking, that this man was AI, and parts of his public persona, they have been heavily questioned by others, but his name actually is there. That's the confusing part. There are legitimate institutional pages containing his name. He's on conference attendee lists. He's a prominent face in scientific workshops and government-adjacent meetings, just as I've been told. I found him in the background of footage at these conferences. At various points, Shalakian appears associated with something called the IRDF Project, Harvard Columbia. And that sounds impressive when I say it, and it looks good on paper too, by the way. But there's a small issue here, because it's remarkably difficult to determine what exactly that phrase even means. But don't fall asleep on me yet, because this is where the story begins to reveal the sinister skeleton beneath the skin. A sophisticated, sinister skeleton that goes well beyond this geriatric who is potentially only a partially real individual. Because he reminds me so very much of a skinwalker, and in a way, he just might be. It appeared that Aegon Shalakian was credential laundering. It is credential laundering. He's still out there. But what exactly is that? Well, he's assuming a partial identity comprised of institutions and organizations that he was really only loosely tied to. It's kind of like lying on your resume when you say you worked for a place, but really, you quit after going through orientation because maybe it wasn't quite for you. You simply encourage people to misunderstand why the title and organization is listed next to your name for some benefit. And then suddenly, his hands not moving in the videos that he was uploading and the whole uncanny valley that he occupied mattered so very little to me. The question now was, what exactly was the benefit of all of these connections he said he had, and why exactly were they so prominently attached to his online identity? Well, you see, there's more to this man than meets the eye. He was even on the Haktua Girls podcast before her weird scandal with stealing people's money through crypto went down. I'm not convinced that this man doesn't speak in code and that there are many secrets to decipher in his words in every single one of his videos, because everything he does appears to be carefully curated and planned. I mean, come on, why is this like 100-year-old looking dude a prominent feature on influencers' podcasts and TikToks? It's just kind of weird. But buried beneath all the strange videos and bizarre online mythology of Aegon Chalakian was a document considerably more important than anything this guy had put on YouTube or TikTok. It was a federal registration. In 2024, a name appears in the federal record that changes the shape of this entire story. That name on that federal registration was Alatra. At first, it's almost just easy to pass over. It's another organization, another unfamiliar acronym buried inside governmental paperwork. Chalakian, however, had registered under the Foreign Agents Registration Act in connection with this thing called the Alatra International Public Movement. And on its face, the filing seemed administrative rather than sinister. This registration, the FARA registration, it's not proof of espionage or any criminal activity. It's just a disclosure requirement. But the more closely I read what Chalakian had actually been retained by Alatra to do, the harder it became to treat Alatra as just a footnote. And then I realized that he had also talked about this organization in one of his YouTube videos. And according to the filings, Chalakian was not simply offering occasional advice to Alatra like he was doing for the entire internet on his YouTube or on his podcasts or on his TikToks. He had actually been brought in to help manage the organization's relationship with the United States itself. His role extended into government relations and public relations, placing Chalakian somewhere between spokesman, political intermediary, and architect of public perception, revolving around this weird organization called Alatra. In other words, he is a propagandist and a diplomat to the people of the United States, and they don't even know it. Because the literal and actual and written and stated objective was to challenge accusations that Alatra was a religious cult. But the means described in the paperwork, they reached far beyond issuing like a press release or correcting some newspaper articles or a simple strike on some content on YouTube that, you know, debased them or something. The effort involved communicating with government agencies, cultivating political relationships, and using media strategically and attempting to alter the way the organization, Alatra, was understood by the public and by people in positions of power. And that was the moment Alatra stopped looking like an empty hole in the ground and began to feel more like the beast itself in the cave. You see, Alatra has a Bible of sorts. It's called Alatra. And if they didn't want to be seen as a cult, why does their Bible, which is also coincidentally their name, start like this?
Man's mind is a true stumbling stone. Perhaps an entire cliff facing the soul. One cannot go around or leap it. To climb up over sharp stones, scraping your nails till they bleed, and falling down the slippery ledges, sweet from the mind. Then to get up anew after regaining spiritual strength and crawl again is not for everyone. For it's so lovely, cozy, sweet, and warm at the cliff's foot. The mind, from frail pants, creates illusions of all that you will wish for, so long as you keep wishing. Wishing for earthly love with a blazing hearth, for children to give birth to, for wealth or fame.
It's all the same. So long as you keep wishing, 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 and it will all be given in one illusion or another. It matters not, so long as you keep wishing, wishing, wishing for the earthly. But it's so hard, cry many people. No, it is not. So many times I've put the clothes on. I've roamed an endless road with just a staff, feeding the flesh with only what I found. I was a king. For long I ruled over the countless peoples.
What the f***? Oh, and of course, they also believe in aliens. One of the strangest claims actually appears in the Alatra Bible itself, which I should mention is written by a woman named Anastasia Novik, okay? And in this Alatra Bible, which is called Alatra, just like the organization, it's called Alatra, there is a discussion about gravity and human biology. And Anastasia concludes that Earth's gravitational conditions supposedly demonstrate that Earth is not humanity's native planet, saying we're all aliens here. Now, it gets a little weird here, but bear with me. In the teachings of the Alatra movement, the Alatra movement, Rigdon Japo is presented as the spiritual leader and ruler of Shambhala, and he's kind of acting as a supreme divine teacher and prophet and cosmic entity, and he repeatedly has conversations in this Bible with Anastasia Novik, okay? In real-world investigations and outside sources, Rigdon is identified as the literary and spiritual alter ego of Igor Danilov, who is the co-founder of Alatra, and we will get to him later. Anyway, Rigdon does not reject the premise that we're all aliens here, and instead he says that humanity is just not spiritually mature enough for this knowledge, and says that it's preferable for now that people believe humans descended from terrestrial ancestors. In the immediately preceding passage, the book speculates about how the human body would behave under the gravitational conditions of other planets. The later Alatra TV material goes dramatically further. In October 2020, an Alatra TV project called Kaleidoscope of Facts held an online conference that was devoted entirely to paleo contact, and the event was initiated by participants of Alatra International Public Movement in the United States, and its accompanying material did not present ancient extraterrestrial contact as just some open question, like so many people do today. It claimed that a large body of evidence actually demonstrated that contact with extraterrestrial civilizations had occurred, and more remarkably, that it has never stopped occurring. And this program suggested that Mars had once supported intelligent civilization, and that the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter was the remains of a destroyed planet called Phaeton, and that the hypothetical planet X was actually a world known as Nubira or Vamphene. Is this why Elon Musk wants to get to Mars so bad? That might sound like just a reactionary or strange question to ask right now, but you just wait, my friends, because this gets even weirder. Regardless, Alatra says that ancient artifacts, depictions of strange figures, supposed spacecraft and spaceports and spacesuits that have been found, they were all presented as fragments of a history that conventional science had either misunderstood or chosen to completely ignore. You can call it whatever you want, but one of Alatra's strategies is effectively making something out of nothing, making a mountain out of a molehill, or whatever. Basically, exactly what they did with Aegon Chalakian, where they made him look like he was something even though he wasn't really that, but he had connections that enabled them to lie about who he was or create a skinwalker out of him. So now, when it comes to their religion, the familiar Alatra pattern once again appears. Archaeology supplied the objects. Mythology supplied the stories, and the movement supplied the key that supposedly explained what everybody else had failed to recognize. Stories of gods descending from heaven, they became accounts of extraterrestrial visitation. Traditions involving celestial ancestors were placed alongside UFO imagery. The Dogon people's traditions about Sirius appeared beside claims involving Orion. Indigenous legends from the Americas, Polynesia, Japan, and elsewhere, they were all gathered together and interpreted through the same paleo contact framework. And the implied conclusion was that when ancient people spoke about gods descending from the sky, perhaps they were not speaking metaphorically at all. Perhaps, according to this narrative, they were describing visitors. And among those visitors, two names begin to appear repeatedly, and you will at least recognize one of them, the Anunnaki, and the other group are the Apexians. Now, Alatra TV described the Apexians as the beings that we would recognize from modern UFO culture as the Greys, and its material placed them alongside the Anunnaki and even reptilian beings. While asking what role exactly these extraterrestrial species had played in our human history, another program asked what happened between humanity and the Apexians roughly 24,000 years ago and presented their existence as part of hidden historical facts. That's direct quote from Alatra. Now, by 2022 and 2023, like a few years ago, this story became even more elaborate. The Alatra TV program, called The Code of Gods, Extraterrestrial Civilizations and Their Impact on Our History, advertised this extraordinary sequence of topics. And it was the arrival of the Apexians, Atlantis, genetic engineering of the Atlanteans, the destruction of Atlantis, the formation of religions, people supposedly carrying an Apexian gene, the end times, and the future development of humanity. According to Aegon Shalakian and much of Alatra, if not all of Alatra, it would appear that we are close to the end times part of this list. Now, if you read that list again in sequence, you begin to see what has happened. Aliens have ceased to be a separate curiosity, and they are now inserted into the origin of civilization itself. And the Apexians are not necessarily portrayed as benevolent teachers either, in case you're wondering. In later Alatra TV material, the story becomes one of, like, occupation. A March 2023 page by Alatra claims that approximately 25-ish thousand years ago, Earth was quite literally invaded and humanity was enslaved by a race of Apexians. And the page itself characterizes them as vicious and without souls. Okay? Their purpose, according to Alatra, was not primarily like land or minerals or technologies. They had actually come for something that human beings themselves possess, something supposedly so valuable that it functioned as a form of cosmic wealth, and it was called Vril. Now, the mythology around this also includes a more developed portrayal of the Anunnaki. A 2023 Alatra TV program asked whether the Anunnaki are actually humanoid, whether they possess telepathy, whether they can influence human will, what planet they actually come from, and even who their god is. Their homeworld is identified in the program's framing as Nubira, rather than what we have come to call Nibiru, and what emerges isn't this belief in aliens as a single category, but actually is something closer to an extraterrestrial anthropology with different races, different motives, and different relationships to humanity. But then something even stranger happens, because the Apexians begin appearing not only in ancient history, but in the modern media environment as well. In 2022, Elektra TV programs began to ask why society was supposedly being encouraged to become comfortable with apexians and suggested that a lot of popular culture was normalizing frightening alien imagery. And then they effectively linked it to the concept of the Overton window, which effectively suggests that human beings were being psychologically prepared to accept creatures that they should actually be regarding with suspicion. Now, all of the mythology has become sort of self-sealing, doesn't it? If people fear gray aliens, that fits the history of apexian hostility. If movies make gray aliens sympathetic, that can be interpreted as conditioning. If scientists reject the ancient alien claims, then science is hiding or misunderstanding evidence. If religions reject the story, religion itself may have been shaped by the hidden history. If archaeological objects resemble modern UFO imagery, they become proof of ancient contact. And if humanity encounters something strange in the future, the worldview already has characters and people waiting to explain it. This is why I think simply saying that Elektra, quote, believes in aliens, undersells what existed in their media ecosystem, because they've gone through great lengths to cover this up and instead adopt this sort of pro-Earth environmentalist image where they wage war against microplastics and you know, mining and all this kind of stuff. They're very much like the Save the Planet type organization now, instead of all of this alien stuff. And we'll get into why, but it involves some very culty stuff that their leader has done only a couple years ago. So right about now, I was talking to myself and I said to myself, you know, we should stop right here. We should do a part one and a part two because the attention spans are getting shorter every day and people aren't really watching hour-long videos anymore. But it occurred to me that if I stop now, people won't really know exactly why this is so weird. I mean, we're just getting started. The story has barely begun. And let's be honest, tales of cults are a dime a dozen now. They're everywhere. We've got the Netflix documentaries. We've got them online. We've got them on TikTok and Facebook. And we've heard all of the cult stories. And it seems like there's hardly anything that really separates one from the other except how they end, right? And all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I know the full story. But they don't know the full story. So they don't know why exactly this is so strange or how it connects to literally all of them. And so I'm going to keep soldiering on. But if you're here at 30 minutes, please just leave me a comment or something letting me know you're here. Maybe shoot me a follow if you are enjoying the video. Give me a like or something. And maybe include a story about your encounter with an Elektra member, if you've encountered one, because they're out here in the wild. I was reading stories of people just encountering them on trains, people encountering them in grocery stores. Like, they are among us, these people. There are thousands and thousands of them. They're out here and they're just kind of incognito because so often they just kind of assume the facade or the role of like the environmentalist, the person who's very pro-Earth, the save the planet type, and they're not really, they don't present themselves as like cult members, you know? So if you've encountered an Elektra member or somebody who has brought up Elektra to you, leave your story in the comments. I would love to hear it because this investigation is kind of ongoing. And like I said, we're just getting started, baby. All of this is weird, but we've barely even gotten to why this cult is weirder than others that we've talked about in the past and weirder than others that we've found, like in documentaries and stuff. And what exactly makes it monumentally more
extremely friendly and cool
than so many other groups like this that we have heard about in the past? Like their connections to people in our government and how they're directly influencing how we perceive the world around us in the West, especially, and what sort of changes they're making in each of our lives, because this is happening.
So, until all of this alien talk, Shalakian had kind of been the mystery, the creeping thing. His credentials, his strange videos, all the institutional names surrounding him, the unsettling sort of gap between appearance and verification. But now there was something standing beside him, something with its own interests, its own reputation to defend, and enough concern about that reputation to actually hire and retain this man whose public identity was kind of already wrapped in the language of government science and intelligence. The strange figure sitting motionless in front of the camera, he was no longer necessarily the center of the story. He was simply the doorman. And the wording of the filings becomes increasingly important when you consider what Alatra was trying to overcome. The problem was not just bad publicity. The organization was confronting allegations that it was something far more troubling than the humanitarian or scientific pro-Earth movement that it appeared to be. It had been accused of functioning as a religious cult, and now you see why. And rather than retreating from public view, it was actually attempting to move in the opposite direction, toward institutions, the government, and toward legitimacy. It wanted to join with the machinery that was capable of shaping how a controversial organization is perceived. Okay, Alatra saw what could destroy it, and instead of fleeing from it, it chose to love and nurture and convince those dangers to adopt it. Now, why does that matter? Because it does, and the answer is pretty unsettling. Quite simply, if we look at these other cults throughout time, or any obscure organization, really, if it's accused of being a cult, you usually expect it to remain obscure. You might expect damage control, legal statements, a coordinated rebranding effort on behalf of the organization to sort of try to clean up its image. We've seen this with other cults 1,000 times before. But what you don't really expect is an organized campaign that is actually aimed at improving governmental relations and political influence. You do see it once in a while, but not often on this scale, if ever really at this scale. Yet this is what began emerging from the paperwork coming out of Alatra. Alatra was not simply trying to convince ordinary people that its critics were wrong, although it was doing that too, because it has an entire public-facing part of it. It was actually trying to convince people inside institutions, schools, and government and intelligence agencies who had access to shaping the minds of the entire population of the world. And that would help them with convincing the public. You see, this is only the American chapter of Alatra. This is going on globally. They're doing this all over the planet. And this is where a certain uneasiness begins to enter the story, because perception itself has become part of Alatra's very bizarre and mysterious mission. It's not about what the organization does, but also about what people believe that it is. Governments respond to reputations. Journalists respond to reputations. Scientists, politicians, the people who organize conferences and potential supporters, they all make decisions based on the perceived legitimacy of whatever the thing is. If you change the perception of something, eventually you can change the doors that open for it. And now suddenly all the weird photographs with all of the big public figures, such as the Pope and others, astronauts, scientists, all of these environmentalists, political figures,
They all matter differently.
Returning to the podium is Ms. Marina Ovtsinova, president of Alatra International Public Movement, bringing her expertise in counterterrorism and global security. She addresses a grave threat to democracy, from stigmatization to repression, focusing on the danger of anti-cultism. Thank you so much.
It's a really big, big pleasure to have the opportunity to address you once again. Thank you so much for that, Pastor Burns. So, and the energy in this room feels really, really huge, right? It feels like a really strong. And it's because we all, every single person in the room, we gathered to defend human freedom, a person's dignity. We all, every single person here understands what that means. And we're here to protect the right to believe, to speak the truth, and to live without fear. These freedoms are the very, very foundation on which true security in human society is built. But we need to acknowledge something very, very clear, that foundation, that really important foundation for the human freedom, is now in danger. Because today there is a well-organized structure at work deliberately attacking that very foundation. And many of the deep, tragic stories that you will hear today from our speakers from this stage are direct result of the action of this transnational structure and its destructive manipulative techniques. So let me educate you a little bit. So what is that, and why does it pose a threat to every person and to society as a whole? The transnational anti-cult network is the highly coordinated international system made up of individual organization, activist, third expert, and biases journalist. Their goal is to systematic dehumanization and destruction of targeted group of people and the incitement of hatred and hostility within the society. What this network does is often described more simply as anti-cultism. But in reality, anti-cultism is the technology of dehumanization and repression. Let me be clear right away. The anti-cult network can target absolutely any group, not just religious one. They can target social organization, hobby club, or even political party. And no matter who they choose, anti-cult agents follow the same well-practiced playbook. First, they slap the label on the targeted group in the media, calling them sect, cult, or simply a dangerous group. Then, the step number two, they launch an aggressive media campaign to smear the group using fake discriminations, false testimonies, and distorted information. Through these dirty media campaigns, they dehumanize the people in the targeted group.
You begin to look at the conferences and the institutional associations and even Shalakian himself differently. But somewhere behind all of this was Alatra, an organization that anybody who is just normal barely even knew about. And it was already concerned enough with its image to involve itself in public relations, in political relationships and social media appearances, in influencer-driven agendas, YouTube interviews with celebrities, and government outreach inside the United States, specifically when it came to facing the public, the everyday citizen of the United States. And this may have been only the first time that the name appeared, but from this point forward, it would just keep returning. You'll find it on websites and videos, beside political appearances and scientific claims, behind extraordinary networks of people scattered across the entire planet, in all countries and on all platforms. And on the surface, it doesn't always seem like it's connected, but it is all connected. I found myself in the spider's web. The spider called Alatra that was not yet sensing my vibrations. And the deeper I went, the less Alatra felt like an organization that I was investigating, and the more it felt like something I kept finding already waiting at the next turn. And I still didn't even know what it really was. If you look at Alatra today, you can easily encounter material about climate, human rights, international cooperation, and global problems. They have a host of websites that look like they are that make them look like they're an activist network, sort of, but not like a radical one, but one that is actually publicly accepted, that hosts conferences in Washington, D.C., sometimes literally within the presence of the current administration, oftentimes, as a matter of fact, with very wealthy, high-ranking people in government and business and science. These are not hippies dancing around in a field somewhere. These are businessmen, scientists, intelligence specialists, politicians, PhD holders. They are wearing suits. They are meeting with religious leaders around the globe. They are quite literally in the highest ranks of all of the governments of every country they're in, and in every scientific community around the world, everywhere. Except, it would appear, Russia, who has kind of labeled them as a sort of terrorist organization. Coincidentally. More on that later. But the more you look at Alatra, the more you see that there is actually something beyond the scientific initiative. There is something beyond the activist network and the political affiliation. It looks like a spiritual movement if you actually just spend a few minutes digging deeper. It looks like a humanitarian organization with some sort of actual spiritual agenda, which is kind of very unique to it, considering you know what they believe if you watched the first half of this video. Not exactly your typical humanitarian movement. Alatra has several books, but of course the primary one is the one that is literally named after them, Alatra by Anastasia Novik, which we've already covered a little bit. But this book is considerably stranger than I expected. It's over 800 pages long. This is no small undertaking. And it's not just a spiritual book. It's not just a collection of meditations or philosophical conversations. It actually attempts to construct an entire alternate explanation of reality, stretching from the human soul to quantum physics, ancient Egypt, black holes, reincarnation, supernatural powers, civilization, politics, and the eventual survival of the human species. And I encountered a number of just basic girls on TikTok reading the book, acting like it was any other fun little tarot card to read. But the book itself calls what it contains not just philosophy or speculation, they call it literal knowledge, almost always with the reverence of like a proper noun. And they claim that this knowledge, with a capital K, is ancient, primordial, and ultimately derived from a spiritual reality that conventional institutions have either forgotten, corrupted, or deliberately hidden, hence their desire to get back into the institutions so badly, perhaps. But even the opening pages establish this unusual hierarchy between those who just read the text and those capable of truly understanding the text. The text kind of divides human understanding between ordinary intellectual reasoning and a higher form of perception that supposedly originates from the soul itself. Remember Rigdon, the king of Shambhala or whatever? Well, he explains in this book that secular society teaches intellect, memory, and logic, while genuine spiritual experience exists beyond the boundaries of the mind. And remember, this Rigdon fellow is a spirit who is communicating to Anastasia Novik, okay? It's not like a scientist or somebody who is helping to write the book. It is a spiritual experience. It is spiritual contact. And later, Anastasia describes advanced followers as people who don't need any proof, quote, that the spiritual is superior to ordinary logic. So doubt itself begins to acquire a spiritual meaning, as you can see. Those who have fully absorbed the knowledge are portrayed as pure, while personal doubts and conventional reasoning, well, those things belong to a lower state of consciousness. And this is where the book really begins to bother me, because this is one of the mechanisms by which a belief system can become almost impossible to falsify. Because if I demand evidence, the system can say that I am demanding evidence because I am trapped in material consciousness, a sort of lower state of consciousness. But if a believer experiences the teachings internally, that experience becomes confirmation without any proof. So if a believer fails to experience anything, the text already has an explanation for that too. They have not worked sufficiently on themselves. They remain distracted by material priorities, or their animal nature is interfering. There's no obvious position outside the belief system from which the belief system is permitted to even be judged, because to judge it at all means that you are of a lower state of consciousness and you simply can't understand. No proof, no evidence, no nothing needed. And the animal nature is not just a metaphor for like selfishness or stupidity, according to Alatra. As the hundreds of pages accumulate, it becomes something closer to a sort of universal adversarial principle against the movement. Human beings supposedly contain both a spiritual nature, which is attempting to return to God, and an animal nature, which is attempting to pull consciousness downward into matter, ego, and desire, and fear, and domination, and all those human things. Above the individual, though, sits an even greater entity, the animal mind, a kind of organizing intelligence of the material world itself. And according to the book, humanity's institutions have gradually become infected by it. All of our things on Earth have become infected by this animal mind. Politics, consumer culture, organized religion, and materialistic science, they can all become mechanisms through which the animal mind keeps human beings trapped inside this artificial understanding of reality, which is why Alatra is trying to get into politics and institutions so badly, because they are trying to save humanity by raising it to this elevated level of consciousness that they believe in for some reason. The world, in other words, is a battlefield that most people cannot see, and Alatra is here to save us all. Now, at various points, the text introduces these mysterious archons, describing a system that manipulates humanity through all their material desires and political structures and symbols and psychological techniques and invisible influences and stuff like this. And ordinary people are compared to robots trapped within a system that has been prepared for them. And they spend their entire lives working, consuming, and pursuing material stability while unknowingly strengthening the very power that enslaves them, this animal mind. Elsewhere, though, the book claims that modern archons understand techniques capable of triggering negative feelings and gaining control over human consciousness, hence why we are considered robots to them. And at that point, Alatra has basically crossed well beyond conventional self-help spirituality, and it has given the reader an invisible enemy. A hidden system of control and a special kind of like body of sacred knowledge capable of explaining what exactly ordinary society supposedly cannot see. So eventually the doctrine just reaches the territory that sounds less like some sort of philosophical mysticism and more like occult cosmology. Because the book describes humanity using this collective spiritual transformation to alter processes occurring beyond the three-dimensional world. In other words, it's trying to bring about a global magic. It discusses humanity reversing a destructive cosmic process represented by the reverse swastika, activating the powers of Alat and thereby creating an entirely different future for mankind. And those who advance far enough supposedly approach what the book openly calls supernatural powers and the supreme white magic. There you go. That's the trick. But you see, this is only the beginning of the story in a weird way. Even though we've come this far, we've uncovered the game. But beyond Aegon and Anastasia, we haven't even begun to reveal the players. You see, the leader of Alatra, who I mentioned before, he's not some American businessman or some Indian guru or some Colombian drug lord. He's not a hippie looking for a field to dance in or a disgruntled evangelist who has left the megachurch behind. He's an ex-KGB operator and part-time chiropractor named Igor Danilov, who for the longest time was operating out of... you guessed it, Ukraine. And part of his shtick there was your typical cult leader activity, hosting orgies in which the women were forced under threat of hell and torture by Satan himself to engage in activities with him. Use your imagination, or better yet, just don't. It's what you would expect. Anyway, due to the efforts of some outstanding renegade journalists, who we will talk about later, Danilov was kicked out of Ukraine for some pretty dark plots against the country, and also weird sex cult stuff and gun running. And now he's found his cult a prominent foothold in a much, much safer place with the help of Aegon Shalakian. Anybody care to take a guess? The good old US of A. But remember, Alatra is global, and their agenda is for all people of the world. The whole thing over. They have independent groups working in many countries in the world. As of August 2026, Alatra TV's own website lists a multilingual YouTube-style channel network covering at least these language markets. The English, the Chinese, the Bulgarian, the Turkish, Hungarian, Serbian, Danish, Czech, Slavic, Spanish, German, Portuguese, Italian, French, Armenian, Korean, Latvian, Lithuanian, Polish, Romanian, Uzbek, Croatian, and Japanese. And that means their visible video infrastructure reaches, at minimum, audiences associated with all of the countries that speak those languages. And they also have many designated social media and YouTube accounts specifically for targeting these countries with these languages. And historically, this reach has been even wider. Alatra itself wrote in 2016 that Alatra TV participants were already operating in a host of countries: Ukraine, Poland, Russia, the US, Australia, Italy, Spain, the Czech Republic, Slovakia. Older Alatra event material also lists activity in Canada, the UK, Switzerland, Sweden, Belgium, Latvia, Belarus, Moldova, Armenia, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, the United Arab Emirates, for goodness sake, Israel, Turkey. There's also the separate but historically intertwined organization, which is just as creepy, known as the Creative Society, which is a social media sort of structure. Elantra itself announced a Creative Society YouTube channel in 2021 and basically instructed all of their followers to go subscribe to its Instagram account, saying that content was being created by participants from more than 180 countries and translated in up to 100 languages. The Creative Society, which has been seen, you know, in the same room as Igor Danilov himself, is a sort of like mini cult within the mega cult of Elatra. It's just another phalange of the beast. But as a key proponent of the Afflicted Creative Society project, which was really launched in 2019, Danilov advocates for a creative society model that is essentially aimed at societal restructuring through stages, including political party formation, and global referendums. And he's also at the same time authoring works on spinal health and degenerative diseases because he's a total kind of weirdo. This is the guy who literally founded Elatra, okay? This is the leader. So everything that you see about all of the Save the Planet, all of the humanitarian aid, all of the getting into the institutions, it's this guy's plan. It's this guy's thing. But he operates it all from the shadows because Elatra is so big and so intertwined with all of the governments and humanitarian aid programs throughout the world that it has an actual hierarchy that is professional and legal. It has a separate president. It has a host of international experts of Elatra on climate, geodynamics, and environmental issues. It has a head of communications and partnerships and events department. It has an official representative of Elatra in Israel. It has official representatives of Elatra in all of these countries, including Germany, Slovakia, America, the Czech Republic. Like, it is crazy. Latin America. Even it is just diabolical how big this thing has become. So you might be asking yourself, well, if we know who the leader is and we know where it all came from, and this all happened within the past like 5 to 10 years, why don't we just shut this guy down? Well, funny you ask that. You see, his activities have in fact drawn international scrutiny, including accusations of disinformation campaigns and utilizing offshore companies, with Ukrainian authorities actually halting Elatra activities in 2023 due to suspicions of disseminating pro-Russian ideas, investigating him since at least 2022 for high treason, participation in a criminal organization, and undermining national security. Allegations that are tied to the distribution of over 1.7 million books under pseudonyms linked to Elatra and suspected Russian propaganda efforts dating back to 2002, by the way. And in December 2023, Ukraine issued an arrest warrant for Danilov, declaring him an internationally wanted person after he repeatedly ignored summonses, leading to raids on Elatra safe houses and offices in Ukraine that uncovered a host of weapons, passports, and prohibited materials, but also merch from Big Don himself. The iconic red hats, which is kind of weird. I'm sure it's not connected in any way and they're just big fans, okay? I'm not trying to say anything at all. I never am. But regardless, you might be like, great, they got him. But no, you see, the courts ultimately decided for some reason that he was operating within his freedom of expression and association, and therefore he's still out there and Elatra continues. But if you're like me, after looking at all of the pictures and the evidence seized in these Ukrainian raids, you just can't get the red merchandise, the red hats, the Daddy Don merch out of your mind. You can't help but ask yourself, why is it there, taken alongside all of this paraphernalia, all of these weapons, all of this propaganda in Ukraine? That's just so strange, isn't it? Well, sort of, until you realize that Pastor Mark Burns, the spiritual guidance leader to the current president, also for some reason stands with Alatra, and not only stands with them, but rigorously, publicly supports them. Again, I'm sure this has absolutely nothing to do with Daddy Don himself, okay? I'm sure that the Ukrainian raids and the merchandise found there has nothing to do with what's going on in the government, okay? I'm just saying what I saw in the pictures, man. But Pastor Mark Burns, he even penned a direct message to Alatra recently saying,
"I have a message to all of the Alatra volunteers and to everyone who's been persecuted by the Russian Orthodox Church, including those that are being called out by the anti-cult movement that is happening to those in Russia and to those in Ukraine. I come to tell you that you're not alone, that we hear you, that there is a fight that is coming to them. You are not by yourself. I'm here to let you know that all of America is behind you. I don't care what you read in the papers. I don't care what you may watch on YouTube. No, there are voices like mine all over the world and those here in the United States of America that are fighting for you. Your laws are not man-made. They are God-made. And so my message to you, keep hope alive. Keep fighting. Don't quit. Never surrender. Know who you are and know in the end there will be victory for you and for all of us who stand for freedom against the tyranny of the Russian Federation that is trying to destroy the freedoms of those from around the world. I am Pastor Mark Burns. I approve this message and I am fighting for you and for every person that stands for freedom and our God liberties that come from God and not from man."
And there you have it. That pretty much seals the deal. It just keeps getting weirder and weirder, doesn't it? But perhaps the weirdest part of all of this is that you can actually see it in action for yourself. Just by YouTubing Alatra's name, just by putting it into the Google browser, just by putting it into any social media platform that you have, you will find hosts of strange accounts that look like they are just, you know, relatively normal, let's make the planet a better place style accounts promoting healthier living, promoting the fighting of nanoplastics, promoting naturalist endeavors and humanitarian aid and all of this. You'll find all of these accounts. What is a little bit harder to find, but still there, you just have to like know what you're looking for, are all of the smear campaigns that these same accounts are pushing against all who would dare to speak against Alatra. And who can say for sure how many of these accounts are real, how many are AI, how many are actual, like, cult members. But it's striking to see all of this out in the open, knowing what you know now. Or at least it should be. And all you really had to learn in the end was what the organization actually was and that it was a name you should be looking at. But a couple of these smear campaigns are worth talking about before we close this puppy out. Remember those renegade journalists I told you about who exposed Igor Danilov in Ukraine? Well, one of those journalists was Kristina Sirakova, and according to reporting about what followed, the movement and its supporters did not simply challenge her conclusions or dispute her evidence or her writings. No. Instead, the attention shifted towards Sirakova herself. She was portrayed as hostile, compromised, part of an alleged anti-cult apparatus, the exact supposed apparatus that Pastor Burns mention in his address to Alatra. Why are prominent Christian and spiritual leaders even fighting against anti-cult apparatuses, supposing that they do exist? You would think that Christians would generally be against cults. I guess not. I don't know. Maybe it depends on your flavor of Christian. But regardless, Sirikova was treated as a hostile entity, as though the act of investigating Alatra had literally become proof that she belonged to the forces supposedly conspiring against it. And the journalist who had entered the story simply to examine a movement suddenly found herself written into that movement's mythology. All the accounts that are currently online spewing pro-Alatra rhetoric were spewing anti-Sirikova rhetoric, which caused absolutely irreversible damage to her life, obviously. The point being, they didn't attack her message, they attacked her. That is their method of defense. But perhaps the journalist who got it worse was Jakub Jal. Now, when Jakub Jal arrived in Tanzania from the Czech Republic, he introduced himself as a passionate humanitarian determined to uplift vulnerable communities in the remote villages of Moshi. Promising to bring hope and opportunity, Jal quickly gained the trust of local residents. But behind the facade of compassion was a far more sinister truth. He was not a savior. He was a predator. This investigative report that I'm pulling this information from is based on an independent documentary by Voice of Freedom, and it uncovers the dark reality of Jal's presence in Tanzania. It's a story of deception, of abuse, and of shattered lives. You see, Jal's entry into Moshi was marked by promises to renovate community centers and support underprivileged children. He first approached the Nature and Skills Center, which is a local initiative focused on rescuing children from vulnerable backgrounds. The staff and community members, they welcomed him with open arms, and they were unaware that he was concealing a disturbing agenda. When he arrived in Moshi, he had come from Dar el Salaam and introduced himself as working with kids and was looking for a center to keep children, which we embraced and told him about our center. That was the beginning of our contact and working together. He promised to help us, what we never witnessed, says Bob, a staff member at the center that was mentioned. According to multiple interviews, including those with staff, guardians, and survivors, Jal's involvement quickly turned the once promising center into a site of fear and trauma. Reports, including allegations of the R-word, physical abuse, and drug use, all inflicted under the guise of humanitarian work, ensued. Teresa, the founder of Nature and Skills Center, recalled how Jal initially appeared well-meaning. Over time, however, she and her team began to observe erratic behavior, including heavy drug use and aggression towards children. He presented himself as a helper, but we started noticing disturbing signs, his use of marijuana, his temper, and how he distanced himself from the children, except when taking photos, she said. Joseph, who worked as Jal's translator, accused him of physically assaulting the children and using funds from European donors to fuel his drug habits and lure young boys. Sounds horrible. Except none of this happened. All of this was made up to smear Jakub Jal because he outed the Ukrainian Alatra safe houses that ultimately got Igor Danilov excommunicated from the country.
Allegedly. Don't forget to say allegedly.
Allegedly. And yet countless YouTubers, influencers, and Alatra journalists viscerally spun this story around the globe to discredit, defund, and destroy the man who is largely considered the journalist most responsible for getting their beloved prophet, Igor Danilov, removed from Ukraine. And he speaks about it to this day. He's just a guy. And he says stuff along the lines of, they've taken everything from me, including his mission, his charity work, what she was actually doing in Tanzania, his friends, his pride, essentially everything but his life from him. He's loosely quoted as saying, now really all they can do is kill me. There's nothing left they can take from me but my life.
But wasn't it the president of Alatra that said this?
Let me be clear right away. The anti-cult network can target absolutely any group, not just religious one. They can target social organization, hobby club, or even political party. And no matter who they choose, anti-cult agents follow the same well-practiced playbook. First, they slap the label on the targeted group in the media, calling them sect, cult, or simply a dangerous group. Then, the step number two, they launch an aggressive media campaign to smear their group using fake discriminations, false testimonies, and distorted information. Through these dirty media campaigns, they dehumanize the people in the targeted group.
That did not age well.
Alatra is perhaps one of the largest, most organized, and most powerful cults in the world. Members have run for president, they've met with the Pope, and somehow they are affiliated with organizations like CERN and intelligence agencies and government circles all around the world. They have close ties with actors, politicians, social media influencers, YouTubers, streamers. They're everywhere. It's likely that you have actually consumed Alatra propaganda without even knowing it. And not just you, but also your children, as they've weaved themselves intricately into every aspect of entertainment, all these different environmentalist agendas, charities, and even the private office of the Republican spiritual advisor to the President of the United States. They've been around for a long time, and their religion perhaps dates back to the very first pagans to walk the earth. And yet something tells me that this story is just beginning. How much have they influenced Elon Musk and his adventures to get to Mars? How have they impacted the alien and UFO disclosure efforts? How deeply have their teachings impacted the spiritual beliefs of the president? And considering how religiously motivated this current party in power seems to be, how much have they impacted the trajectory of our country? Before I go, I leave you with these final words from the Alatra Bible. The secret of this word was once kept in their circles by the spiritually initiated people who were resisting the power of the animal mind in any of its manifestations. These were the true warriors of light, the keepers of the primordial knowledge. For their feet of arms, the truth was revealed to them. There is no power greater than the spiritual power. Having the primordial knowledge, you also have power. Having power, you influence with the word that is the glory, the name, and the call. The glory heralds the truth in the radiance of immortality for those who have been crowned in honor in approaching the One. The name manifests the sign of the primordial One, which is the basis and the key to understanding events. The eternal call is the primordial sound, the sound of creation. It fills the sign with the power of a lot and makes it mighty in creation. For a lot is a manifestation of God's will. It is the all-inherent force, the foremother of everything created according to His will. The worthy one follows the eternal call of the soul, announcing the call of the soul's victory, Alatra. Everyone who hears is a summoned one, and together are the power that can change the whole world. The creating power coming from God is Alatra. Thanks for watching, everybody. Be safe out there. And in case I don't see ya, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.